Right. Welcome in. Welcome back, everybody, to another Dog Days of Summer edition of the Always Irish Notre Dame Football Podcast channel, brought to you in part by the Michigan Sports and Entertainment Podcast Network. So welcome in, everybody. This is. Listen, it's a tricky time of the year, and I don't know how else to say this, but it's about this time every year that football itch starts kind of nudging at you a little bit. You know, it starts kind of tapping on your shoulder a little bit, you know, especially last week when you get into those, what is it, the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is the only day of the year where there's no professional sports, and it, you know, it's hot as hell out, and you're just sitting there. That's when football starts tapping me on the shoulder saying, hey, buddy, I'm almost here. And that excites me very much, but it also is anxiety producing and provoking at the same time, because if you're not always anxious as a Notre Dame fan, you ain't paying attention. So we got a lot to do today. So let's get into this. And let's get the propers out of the way. Then we're going to do a little outline of the show. I'm going to go, this is going to be interesting. And this is something where I don't even really know the answers to some of what I'm going to do. I'm going to do them on the fly, and we're just going to do them together. So you'll understand what I mean in a minute. So let's get the propers out of the way, shall we? Obviously on YouTube, Always Irish is where you could find me. We are slowly growing. I do appreciate that. The Twitter is, type in Always Irish, you'll find me there, or at JKZND4, you can find me there. Obviously, iTunes, Stitcher, I'm working on getting on Podbay, I'm on Google Play, and I've been checking the analytics for the iTunes version of this show, and it is growing pretty steadily, which is encouraging, and I anticipate that that'll ramp up even more once camp starts and everybody comes back aboard the football train. So reach out any way you can on any of those outlets. Subscribe, like, give a review, share, tell a friend, do whatever you're going to do. I appreciate it. It helps the show grow. So thank you for that. And before I forget about this, I am going to offer you guys the same thing I offered some of my Twitter followers over the weekend. And if I don't do this now, I'm going to forget it. So here's the deal. I got as a starter testing kit, ordered some Always Irish advertising merchandising materials, okay? Started out as a really sharp-looking bumper sticker, and I got excited and overdid it and got some other stuff too. Eventually down the road, this stuff's going to end up in a store and is going to cost money. For now, for all you people that have been here from the beginning and are helping this show grow and get recognized and get appreciated, anybody who wants a little, what is it going to be? I don't know, a box or a bag or a kit. I'm not sure how I'm going to send them out yet. But anybody who wants a starter pack of some of this swag, I'm going to send it to you for free. I'll cover the postage. I don't care. For now, I just want to grow the name, get it out there, grow the brand. And I want to thank all the people that have been loyal from the beginning that are helping this get started. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. I realize not everybody that listens to this show is on Twitter. And so I can't just make that broad assumption or think that everybody's going to see what I put on Twitter. So here's the deal. If you would like me to send you a packet with a bunch of swag, really cool stuff, I'm not going to tell you everything in it. You'll get it and you'll see. But I think it's some really fun stuff. All you got to do, email me at jkznd4@yahoo.com. Tell me where I'm going to mail this stuff. Give me your name and your mailing address. I'll put it out in the mail to you this week. You'll get it in a few days. Free of charge to you, nothing. Just send me it and send me your info and I will send that to you. It is jkznd4@yahoo.com is the email. If you are on Twitter, you could direct message me, and a bunch of people did that over the weekend, and they all got swag bags coming their way, okay? And so eventually this stuff won't be free once we grow a little bit more, but for now, I just want to thank you guys, and I'm excited. The stuff I ordered looks so cool. I want to get it out to the people that want it. I'm not even worried about any cost. So send me your info and I will send you a kit. Okay, so let's get into the show now, all right? And so here's what we're going to do. I have a few bullet point things I want to go over, and those are going to be pretty quick, and so we're going to hit those. Some of them are reviewing some older stuff and updating some information. Some of it's brand new stuff that I want to go over. Then after that, we are going to revisit a show I did. I think it was like, I'm not exaggerating, 160 degrees difference in temperature when I recorded the show I'm going to go back over as it is right now in Illinois. I believe I recorded this show in the polar vortex when it was like minus 50, minus 60 degrees in Chicago, and now it's like 100 degrees in Chicago. Okay, so here's what that is. What I put out when I had a snow day and didn't have to go to work in like February, I sat at home with my little warm coffee looking at all the carnage outside, and I did an episode called, "What are the 10 things I'm looking for as Notre Dame enters spring practice?" Okay, and so I was looking forward to the spring sessions in the blue and gold game. We had just come off the Clemson situation. And I just kind of broad spectrum came up with 10 bullet pointed ideas of things that struck me that we as Notre Dame fans should have been looking for to monitor the progress of this team or not progress of this team as we entered spring. So now what I want to do is, now that we've seen the spring sessions, we have some answers. I don't think we have all the answers. But what I want to do is, now that we are through that, and the next thing we're going to enter in a few weeks is actual fall camp, I want to revisit this list and update you guys on how I feel about each of those 10 items. And if I feel more comfortable with them, less comfortable with them, about the same, and explain why. Some of these things have moved. All my positions aren't the same or I wouldn't do this. And so I think that's important as we move towards the season to look at these factors and where I think, and you guys play along, tell me what you think. The other reason I want to do this is we did pick up a big chunk of audience once we expanded to iTunes and on the Michigan Sports Entertainment website and all this other stuff. We're more accessible, and that was put out way before then. And so some people, I'm sure, missed that. So if you did, it'll be a good way to put 10 new things in your mind to think about as we enter fall camp. So I think this is an excellent exercise to do, and there's some very interesting nuance and things we're going to get into about this topic. That being said, here's really where we're going to start. And I saw this tidbit come across Twitter over the weekend, and it blew my mind. It blew my mind in some ways, but in other ways, it makes perfect sense to what I've been talking about on this show. But I think seeing the other numbers made it more real. So let me explain what I'm getting at. There is a tweet that came across, and it said, "Here are the college football head coaches' records the last 3 years versus the final AP Top 25. Now, I think that's critical, the word final, okay? So you're not talking about you're playing an overhyped team week one and you beat them, and then they end up 6-6 and they're nowhere close to being a good team, but you want to give yourselves credit for beating the number 8 team because they were 8 when you played. Okay, no. This is overall final AP Top 25. So this is over the course of the entire year. Records the last 3 years. I think the first two are going to be drop dead obvious to everyone. And if you can't get them, you got problems. Now, one note that I would like to make is Urban Meyer is not on this list because this was among current head coaches, which he is currently no more. He's too busy doing life podcasts about how to build good, healthy cultures and leadership. Anyways, records the last 3 years. Dabo, 14-2. Now, you want to talk about a guy who's got it going on. That's an unbelievable record. There's not much to say. 14-2 is unbelievable. Okay. Saban, 14-3, same damn thing. Okay. Now, here's where it gets interesting. I think everybody with a clean slate, if I just proposed this question to you, you would have picked probably the top three. It would have been Dabo, Saban, and Urban. So everybody's got those. I want you to guess, after those two, Dabo and Saban, in the last 3 years versus the final AP top 25, who else do you think has the best record? Guess. Did you guess it? Brian Kelly. 8-7. Now, I got a couple thoughts here. One is, wow, Brian Kelly's third on this list of all the people and all the complaints we have about Brian Kelly in big games. He's third on this list. Now, here's the next thought you have. Look at the drop-off between 14-2, 14-3. The third best guy in the country is only 8-7, one tick above 500. Now, that goes to show you what I've been saying for a long time on this show. When it comes to coaches in college football right now, there's 1-2 and then a cliff and then everybody else in a big bunch. Before, I don't know when it was, a handful of shows again, we were discussing something similar to this. And that's exactly what I said. I didn't even look up the numbers, but what I said was, it's got to be these two guys, a humongous drop-off, and then a big cluster of a bunch of other guys who are probably decent, but aren't excelling at a rate that you would recognize straight up without seeing the numbers that would come to mind as excelling in this particular stat. So here's what you got. Kelly, 8-7. Smart, 7-7, Gundy, 5-5, Hilton, 6-7, Leach, 4-5, Peterson, 4-5, Fisher, 6-8, Crist, 5-7, Franklin, 5-7, Frost, 4-6, Malzahn, 6-10, Harbaugh, 5-9. Yeah, that's what they pay you $7 or $8 million to come to Michigan for, to go 5-9 in every big game. And then Mullen, 3-8. Okay, so what do we take from this? Well, we already knew. There's two guys that are head and shoulders above everybody else, not only in terms of recruiting and talent, but also getting the most out of it. Now, those are two unrelated things that end up being tethered together if you're good. There's a lot of guys that can recruit a lot of talent that don't get top-end results consistently. The real trick is getting top-end talent and then getting the most out of it. These two guys are head and shoulders above everybody. And it's, I don't know what to say. So you just look at whatever that winning gene is or whatever that special gift those two guys have to motivate. Because other people have talent too and a lot of it. And nobody's better than 500 in this group except for Brian Kelly at 8-7. So this just lets you know, it's those two and a huge cliff. And the way they both recruit, listen, that winning gene isn't going away. You either have that gift or you don't. And they both clearly have that gift. So unless they just quit recruiting well, I don't know what's going to change until they retire. They're going to be good, really good, top end good all the time. And so I don't know what to say. You got to find a guy that has that gene, that get the most out of everything gene, that know what buttons to push to get the most out of my guys gene, that how do we not get complacent even though we've been really good for a long time? Certain guys just know how to press those buttons. These two are the two. They're the only two in the whole country. And this actually brings me to the next bullet point that I wanted to go over. I was sitting on the patio the other night and having a beer, just relaxing, listening to some music, just chilling out, zoning out. And I was thinking about this. I was looking at like the Big Five conferences and And I was just thinking, I'm thinking in my mind, who has a legitimate chance to win these conferences? Okay. And what I came up with is there are just not that many teams that I think are that good overall. Like, if you want to talk about parity and talent being spread out now because, you know, this relates to Notre Dame too. It used to be a big selling point that Notre Dame had the TV contract. Guys like Randy Moss said they wanted to play there to be on TV and get that attention. It doesn't matter. Now, there's 50 channels that play college football games. If you're anything, you're going to be on TV. So people talk about like the parity now, and they say the talent's been dispersed more equally because, you know, just because of exposure now, and even small school kids get recognized, like all this stuff. Well, fine. I think there's parity in terms of in the middle, kind of. Not the bottom feeders, but not Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, kind of. That middle area, I think pretty much anybody could probably beat anybody on a given day. Like, if that's what you mean by parity, fine. But when I talk about consistency to win a conference and compete for a championship, I think there's only like 7 or 8 teams in the whole country that are in that discussion. That's it. Like, I don't see surprises anymore. Like, I just think it's just too obvious who the haves and the have-nots are and to what extent. That when I look at this, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I see 8 teams with a chance and nobody else. Like, I'm just writing off all these teams and all these conferences because I just don't see it. They're just not good enough. Now, they might jump up and upset a rival on a given day or catch some good bounces or play out of their ass 1 week or something like that. But high-level consistency to the point where I think you can win a playoff game and a championship, I got 8 teams. That's it. And truthfully, it might even be 7 or 6 teams. I'm stretching to 8 just for conversation. Here's what I got. In the SEC, who do you like? Alabama, Georgia, no one else, right? Are you going to tell me you think any of those other teams are going to actually win the SEC? I don't believe it. It's a 2-horse race. Alabama, Georgia. Now, the one thing I will say is, I think this conference has a lot of teams that tend to devour each other, and it's such a physical conference that I think teams get beat up and worn down over the course of the year. Goofy things can happen. But overall, I wouldn't put money on anybody but Alabama and Georgia to win this conference. And I'm putting my money on Alabama until Georgia proves they can get over the hump. Georgia's in a similar situation to Notre Dame, where they're really, I think they're further along than Notre Dame is because they have more raw talent and athleticism top to bottom on the roster. So in terms of physical, they are ahead of Notre Dame in my mind. Just in terms of overall athletes on the roster and depth of freak athletes, Georgia's ahead of Notre Dame. But in terms of results, Georgia's in a similar place where they're right at that precipice. You've seen them get close, but they haven't been able to finish. And so that's what everybody's looking for is when or will they be able to overcome Alabama and win that conference and knock Alabama out, okay? So until I see it happen, I'm putting my money on Alabama because why wouldn't I, right? Like that's what I see. That's what I'm going to do. So yes, that conference has the ability for a couple of these rivalry games, the heavy hitters, to be able to take each other out. But overall, it's Alabama or Georgia. That's it. So that's a two teams there. The ACC is one team until further notice. It's Clemson and nobody. I'm not buying Syracuse. I'm not buying Virginia. I'm not buying Virginia Tech. Like, no. It Pitt? Like, no. This is not real life, okay? This is Clemson, a huge drop-off, everyone else. Again, I am not saying somebody can't jump up and beat Clemson 1 week. but I'm looking at overall consistency for 12 weeks to win this conference. It's Clemson and nobody else. They would have to eliminate themselves for that to happen. This conference is just not. You got these traditional powers like Miami and Florida State, and they're just down. They're just down until further notice. And I just can't believe in Virginia and Syracuse and Pitt. They're nowhere. That's like junior varsity football playing Clemson. It's just not even close. So I only have one team there. And then you get to the Big Ten. What do you like out of the Big Ten? Like, I guess everybody's just watching to see if there's any drop-off or how big the drop-off is for Ohio State under Ryan Day now that Urban's gone. So I guess that's what people are looking at. And then you have people picking Michigan, and I refuse to go there. I refuse to go there. I'm not picking Michigan to win shit. So the media can kiss their ass all they want. I'm not picking them to win shit. So, until I see... Now, here's the problem, though. Again, this is a conference with a lot of people that could probably have a good game and knock somebody off, but I don't see any other teams right now that are in shape to play well enough over 12 weeks to win this conference, other than Ohio State, and I refuse to say Michigan because I just don't believe it. I've seen nothing that would make me believe that. And I am calling time out of my hatred of Michigan. Putting that aside, objectively looking at this as a football lover who never misses one of their games, because I hate watch their games, so I never miss them, okay? And I've seen nothing to tell me that they're going to, like, go 11-1 and win this and not win this conference and division, knock off Ohio State. Nope, haven't seen it. So prove it first. Till then, it's Ohio State. None of those. I'm going to tell you who one of the biggest frauds in America is, other than Harbaugh. James Franklin does not impress me. Overrated. No. Don't believe that. No. Who else are you going to throw at me? I don't believe in Wisconsin. They're a nice team, but they're not no contender. Michigan State just doesn't have enough talent. Yeah, they bow up and play tough in, you know, against Michigan and stuff in the rivalry game. I just don't think they have enough to win this conference. Are you kidding me? Their talent level to Ohio State? No, not even close. Not even close. So I got Ohio State until further notice. Now, here's the other thing about that. I hate to say it, but this just dawned on me the other day. I'm an Ohio State fan now. Yeah, I know. Everybody just had a stroke, including myself. But hear me out. I despise Michigan so much. And now that Urban's gone from Ohio State, he was the biggest reason I couldn't stand Ohio State the last handful of years, because of what a fraud he is. And everybody still buys it and kisses his ass. But now that he's gone, we kind of need Ohio State to still be good. Otherwise, Michigan, just based on talent alone, doesn't even matter how inept and dumb brickhead Harbaugh is, just based on the talent they get in there alone, if Ohio State's not in the picture anymore, drops off, takes a nosedive, Michigan's going to start winning this thing every year, because there's just nobody else that gets talent in the Big Ten. Like, that's the thing you got to understand. In no way am I saying that Harbaugh is a great coach. It isn't about that. It's that Michigan recruits talent to Michigan because of the big M that says Michigan. Same with Ohio State. And nobody else really has that going in the Big Ten except for those two. So with Urban gone, if somebody has to win the Big Ten and make the playoff, I hate Ohio State too, but it's nowhere close to what I feel about Michigan. So now that Urban's gone, I hope Ryan Day does good enough to hold off Michigan just to keep them from getting in the playoff. Because that's the deal. It's not, those are the two schools that get all the top end talent in the Big Ten. It's Ohio State, then Michigan, then a huge drop off in terms of talent, top end talent. Yeah, you got a bunch of middle of the road, cute teams like Iowa, like Indiana, like Northwestern, like Wisconsin. Those are teams that if you're not having a good day, they can beat you. But it isn't because they have freak athletes. There's only two of those schools, and it's Ohio State and Michigan. So I hope Ryan Day keeps it together and holds Michigan off. Somebody's got to win the Big Ten. And if I had my pick, it'd be Northwestern, probably. Just because I respect that they have smart kids and do it the right way. But that ain't going to happen. Let's be realistic. That ain't going to happen. So as much as Fitz annoys me, I respect what he's doing at a smart guy school. But he ain't going to win it. So somebody asked to. I'd rather be Ohio State than Michigan. That's just how I look at it. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4 teams pretty much. Because I'm giving Clemson and Ohio State the nod there. And then you have Bama, Georgia. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Then we get into, what do you want to talk about? The Pac-12? You want me to believe in Washington or Oregon? And if not them, then who? Stanford or USC? I don't think so. The Pac-12 to me is a dumpster fire. The only thing they are good for right now to me is late night drunk watching after Notre Dame plays. At like 1:30 in the morning, I'm watching Pac-12 games, drinking Miller Lite, and I love it. There's nothing better than when Notre Dame wins, and you could check that off. Then you just sit back and watch the carnage. There's nothing better than those 1:30 in the morning, I'm still drinking beer, Notre Dame while I'm watching whatever shitty Pac-12 games going on. So I just don't believe in any of these teams. I mean, somebody's going to win that conference. I got it. People keep saying Oregon's close to blowing up, and I know that, but I just have to see it to believe it, and I haven't seen enough yet. Maybe this year's the year, but I got to see it before I buy into it. Washington, I like Peterson a lot. I've always respected what he does. I thought he's a guy who gets the most out of his teams that don't usually have the most talent, but he gets the most out of them. I always respect guys like that. Patterson and Peterson are two that come to mind that do that very well. But I just don't buy any of these teams as national title contenders. Somebody's going to win the conference, but I just don't think any team from that conference is a national title competitor. I just don't. I don't. I don't buy Stanford USC at all. That No. So Washington, Oregon, take your pick. I don't like any of these teams in terms of national. Somebody's got to win it, win the conference, but I don't nationally, no. So it wouldn't surprise me if two or three of these teams in the Pac-12 are all just about as good as each other and then knock each other off throughout the year. That wouldn't surprise me at all if their champion had three losses or something. And they might get left out of the playoff again, and I just don't buy them as national contenders, and they're largely to be disregarded. That conference is on fire. They have bad publicity, bad things going on with their TV deals. They have nothing but problems out there. And then we get to the Big 12, and I keep hearing how Texas is back. I have to see more consistent, high-level play from Texas week in, week out for me to buy in. Until then, I'm hitching my train to the wagon or whatever you call the Boomer Sooner. The coolest thing that thing ever did was that one game where they turned too sharp and they flipped that dumb thing over. Anyways, Lincoln Riley's a badass. Everybody should be jealous of what he has going. He's good looking. He's a rock star down there. He keeps getting Heisman level quarterbacks to come in there. He's got it going on. So until further notice, that's their conference to lose. And if you want to buy the Texas thing, buy it. I need to see it more consistent week to week before I believe in Texas. So that's what I have. I mean, what am I missing here, guys? Who else actually has a chance to win a championship? Bama, Georgia, Clemson, sure. I'm not even sure Ohio State anymore just because of Ryan. Because you don't know what's going to happen without Urban. So, Bama, Georgia winner, and Clemson. I know those three teams have the talent it takes to win a championship. I don't know whether they will or not, but I know they have the talent on the roster to do it. And I don't know what Ohio State's going to come up with. So when I look at this, there's really a handful of teams I think have a chance, and then a huge drop off. So you guys tell me what I'm missing, but this is what I see. There's some teams that are going to knock some people off, but I'm talking about high level play throughout the year to win a championship. I only see it from a handful of teams, and this is how I see it breaking down. It's actually pretty boring if you look at it. But it's the haves and the have-nots, and the ultra talent, and then dispersed everything else. That's what I see. And so these upper haves really have it. And then I just see a drop-off. That's just how I see it. Tell me if I'm missing a team. But this is what I see for these conferences. Some of it isn't that exciting or good. On to another note, and I wanted to follow up on this in light of being totally 100% fair. As much as I hate Michigan, it was, I talked about Shea Patterson tweeting that stuff about he should have won the Heisman and if he was called plays and stuff. There is an account on Twitter called College Football Quotes. They are putting out fake stuff with fake accounts that look like real accounts, but with like one extra space or something. And so that is total garbage. They should be banned and kicked off Twitter. College Football Quotes is the name of this account. And they posted that from a fake Shea Patterson account. That is not cool. They did some other stuff under Stephen A. Smith saying he said some stuff over the weekend. Totally fake. So College Football Quotes is the account, and it's fake. I want to be very clear and fair to Shea Patterson. That was fake, and it's really a shitty move to be messing with people's lives by doing this. I want to be clear about that. I saw a lot more praise given to Michigan over the weekend. A lot of people picking them in the top five. I keep seeing it. I don't understand it for a few reasons. Not just blind hatred. There are reasons, okay? I'm mature enough to put that aside and objectively look at football. I know what I'm looking at. Here's the problem. I see Michigan in a similar situation to Notre Dame right now, in that I expect their offense to take a step forward with their new offensive coordinator, offensive line getting their more experience, everything, okay? I see that. But I see their defense taking a step back just like Notre Dame, not because they're going to be bad statistically, but because they lost all their major playmakers to the NFL. And I just don't think you snap your fingers and replace that. That goes for Notre Dame and Michigan. With Rashawn Gary and Winovich and them guys. Come on. So that's what I see. And here's the other thing. In terms of Big Ten schedules go, Michigan's got about as tough as a Big Ten schedule as you're going to find. And I actually give them credit for scheduling Army and Notre Dame out of conference. Now, I don't know if they knew Army was going to be as pesky as they've been lately when they scheduled them. But at least all their out-of-conference games aren't Central this and Junior College that. So I give them credit for that. Now, they do go at Wisconsin September 21st. But here's the big thing. I think this is why people like them this year so much. Yes, they go to Penn State October 19th, back home for Notre Dame the next week. That is a tough little turnaround for them at Penn State, as loud as that place is, night game, and then come home for Notre Dame. But here's the thing. Michigan has Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Michigan State all at home. And I think that's what people are really giving them a lot of benefit for. And so I get it to some extent, but you still got to beat teams. So they have for a Big Ten schedule, it is fairly difficult. I'll give them credit for that. For a Big Ten schedule. Not saying overall. For a Big Ten schedule, it's about as tough as you're going to find. So I give them credit for that. But I just think they're like Notre Dame. I expect the offense to go forward, defense to step back, some question marks, and I just don't know. I can't pick them to win the conference. Not going to happen. All right. Now, let's get into this 10 things to look for list, okay? And I'm not going to make this an hour-long thing, but I'm just briefly going to give you my thoughts on this. So here was the deal. Again, before spring practice, I did 10 bullet point things to look for that are in my mind that I want answers to this spring. And I wanted to see them in the blue and gold game and in the practice sessions, okay? Now, these are not listed 1 through 10 in importance, 10 to 1. They're just 10 things that popped into my brain. So whatever the order is, the order is. Now that we are through spring practice, leading into fall practice, I'm going to provide an update and say whether I feel good, better, about the same about these 10 questions. Did I get any answers? Here we go. Number 1, I need the quarterback arrow to be pointing directly up. Okay? Now, this is tricky because my answer to this is kind of yes and kind of no. Do I feel better about it? And here's why. From all indications, Book had a really good spring, has grown a lot, matured a lot, assumed more of a leadership role, and little things, you know, recognition, moving around in the pocket, you know, just all these little nuanced things apparently he's getting better at, okay? That's fine. The problems I have, though, is, so with Book, I think the arrows are pointing up. I see no reason not to expect him to improve. But here are the two problems I have that make me call timeout on this. One is, I'll believe it when I see a Notre Dame quarterback under Brian Kelly get better the more years they're in the program. Because it hasn't happened yet. Golson? No. Reese? He wouldn't be coaching if it was true. He'd be playing. Wimbush? Hell no. Zaire? No. Kaiser? No. Dane? No. So I'm still waiting for the Brian Kelly Notre Dame quarterback to get better the second year they're in the system and not regress. I personally think Ian Book is mentally strong enough. He's going to be the one to do it. But who can blame me for being worried about it till I actually see it freaking happen? Okay? So that's where I stand on that. Makes me nervous. Brian Kelly is supposed to be a quarterback guy coming out of Cincinnati. Reads, progressions, leadership, more accuracy, and more willingness to throw deep balls. That's what we need to see from Ian Book. Along with using his feet when it is judicious, but not getting killed and banged up. Because here's the downside with this. Aside from what I said, that I'm still nervous to see one of these quarterbacks actually improve under Kelly, because it hasn't happened yet. The other thing is, I did expect Phil to be further along than he is now. And you don't have, now, while I don't want Wimbush to be my starter, he's a hell of a backup. Wimbush is about as good of a backup quarterback as you could get. And guess what? He's going to be starting for UCF. Because their main guy shredded his entire body last year. And then the other guy he was competing with broke his ankle. So Wimbush is going to get that job. So now you have Phil. Phil is not where I wanted him to be at this point in his development. That worries me. Ian Book takes another helmet to the ribs like he did against Northwestern. Now I'm terrified because Phil is nowhere near where I think he should be in his development now. And I don't know what you're going to get out of him if you need him to come in and win you a game. That scares the shit out of me. He should be further along. So I don't know why it isn't happening, but I wanted his big arm and athletic body to compete with Ian Book for this starting job this year. That just didn't happen. He's miles behind. So that should make all of us nervous. Book takes a helmet to the ribs, your whole season might be screwed. So on the quarterbacks, on the starting front, I feel good about it. But if something happens to Ian, your whole season could be over. Because Phil ain't where he needs to be. And that scares the hell out of me. 2, special teams. Don't even get me started on special teams. They are already bad. Without losing your punter and your kicker, they were already bad. Brian Polian, I love him as recruiting coordinator. I love his effort on the recruiting trail. Keep him around to recruit and do that. Special teams have been bad under Brian Kelly. I am already starting to overheat and sweat and stress out just thinking about what this is going to look like this year. The coverage units are already bad, have been bad, okay? I don't know if Kelly's going to let any of these fast kids return kicks and punts to try and get some yardage. Okay, now I have a place kicker who not only can't keep it in bounds on kickoffs, Dorr likes to hit it out of bounds at kickoffs, but he's also replacing Yoon, and I'm supposed to trust him to kick field goals? No chance. And then you lose the mullet man, Mr. Boomer Bust, 70-yard punt, 30-yard punt. Okay, you lost him. And now I got Jay Bramblett, who I've never even heard of before. So I'm supposed to trust these guys on top of the history of Brian Poley and special teams already being bad. No, no, no. Totally terrified, worried that they're going to cost us a game or two this year. And, you know, I just have no patience for this for a couple reasons. One is, you revamped this entire strength and conditioning program, and now our offense and defense isn't wearing out. We're wearing people out late in games, and we've upgraded everything, all this stuff. And then you're going to lose a game because a stupid kicker can't kick a field goal or keep the ball in bounds at a kickoff. And that's just so annoying to me. It's totally unacceptable. But I could totally see it costing us one or two games. I have no faith, no trust in this unit because it's just, prove it to me. Prove it to me. If you want to love Yoon and everything, fine, he's gone. So now No. I'm terrified this could cost us games. And so I have a proposed idea of how to combat this. Okay, guys? Here's what I say. If these special teams, especially like field goal kicking, are bad games 1 and 2 against Louisville and New Mexico, I'm not kidding you when I just say, screw that going into Georgia. Screw it. I am not letting some nerd kicker blow us the game against Georgia. Cannot happen. So you know what else? If these guys can't make kicks against Louisville and Bob Davey, they're sure as hell not going to start making them in Athens, Georgia. In a night game against a top three team in the country. So, if these guys struggle weeks 1 and 2 against these no-name teams we're playing with no pressure, what should be no pressure, forget it. I want Chip and Brian Kelly to prepare the offense to go for it on fourth down damn near all over the field. So when you're in 3rd and 7, plan on having 2 downs to get it and call your plays accordingly. Because I don't have patience for special teams to cost this team games this year. Cannot happen. And I've mentioned this before. Here's what pisses me off about special teams. It should be the easiest thing to recruit in the entire world. There is no nuance. There is no subjective, what do I think of this guy? What do I think of that guy? There is no, well, maybe this linebacker's just making plays because he's in a shitty high school conference. There is none of that. It's literally field goals. How many did you make? How many did you miss? What's your average punt? You're telling me Notre Dame can't just recruit out of where I went to school, the Chicago Catholic League. I guarantee they could fill out these positions. Just recruiting out of the Chicago Catholic League. So I have no patience. There's no excuse for Notre Dame not to have good punters and kickers ready all the time. No excuse. They cannot cost us games this year. And I got a feeling they're going to. So if they're shitty weeks 1 and 2, screw them. You tell them that was your tryout. You blew it. We're going for it on fourth down against Georgia. 2 down territory. We're going for it. Because I don't have patience for this crap. You want to keep Polian on because he's a good recruiting coordinator? Fine. Bring somebody in who can coach special teams. The next thing on my list is speed. Okay? Speed. After the spring, I know we have it. And I knew it before then, but Kelly just wouldn't let anybody see it because he's scared to play these young kids. Okay? We have speed with Lenzies, Keys, Austin. Okay? Speed. Michael Young, Joe Wilkins. There's speed. But here's the question. Speed is only good if it's used correctly. I don't see Notre Dame's offense the last couple years using their speed to the fullest extent. here's what I would do. What's your quarterback strength right now? Accuracy on short and intermediate passes. Ian Book is almost the best in the whole country at doing that. And then I see that we have all these fast athletes in the slot, out wide, all over. I didn't even count Fink, but you got these fast guys. I'll tell you what I'd do. I would run pick plays and rub plays 24/7, 365, all day, all night. I would dare the refs to call it like they did against us against Florida State, that bullshit. They're not going to call it every time. I would run pick plays and crossing patterns 24/7. Get the ball out into space. Let our fast guys run. That's what I need to see. All Chip Long and Brian Kelly talk about with this offense is taking the next step with more explosive plays. They got explosive plays last year from Dexter. That's it. Okay? I don't want to see 8-yard fade patterns to the out of bounds line. I want to see 8-yard crossing routes and then a 30-yard run after it. Run these pick plays, run these shallow crossing routes, confuse the hell out of the defense. Dare the refs to call you for a pick play. They might call you once. They're not going to call five times. Keep running it. They work. They work. So we got speed, but it's only good if they use it right. That's what I want to see. Plain and simple. I am not exaggerating. I would run pick plays 24/7. They ain't going to call it. They're just not going to call it every time. Run it. Run it. Let's see these guys in space. Now, the other reason that I want that to be a bigger part of the offense, along with tight ends, which I hope are a big part of the game plan this year, either one or two. We need to get back to that. It opens everything else up, okay? But here's another reason I want those receivers to be more active and do more is because of the instability I still feel at the running back position. Now, I trust Jafar to be a serviceable back. And then you have Tony Jones, you have Jameer Smith, you have Sebo, okay? Fine, like, I could live with Jafar. He's going to be reliable if he's healthy. That's the other thing. I got to see him stay healthy, and he really hasn't yet. So how can I count on it when I haven't seen him do it yet? That's the problem I have with this discussion, okay? You can't just assume it. He has a history of being banged up. But I think between Jafar and Jones and Jameer Smith even and Sebo, I think that is serviceable, but it ain't Dexter. It ain't that extra gear. The only one in this group with an extra gear is the freshman Kyron Williams, who isn't going to play because Brian Kelly's scared to play freshman. And so you're going to lose that electricity you got from having Dexter back there because now you have these guys who don't have elite speed but are going to be reliable, not put the ball on the ground. I get that. But you got to get these electric plays from somewhere. And if it ain't going to come from there, I need it to come from all those receivers and the tight ends then. So let's lean more on that. I'm fine with that. And so the running back position, I feel a little better about it because I think Jafar looked really good. And some of the Jameer Smith looks better than I ever thought he would look. Okay, like I can live with this. But in 8 game wreckers like Dexter, that's Chris Tyree and he's not on campus yet. Okay, so you need to adjust because we need the big plays from somewhere. And I just don't see it out of this group. They're not fast enough. The only one who's fast enough is Kyron, and he ain't going to see the field. Okay, so you're going to have a serviceable stable of backs, but it ain't Dexter. So you got to get those big plays from somewhere. Listen, next on the list, this might be my number one question mark of the entire team, and that is how will the defense adjust to losing their leadership on all three levels. Leadership in terms of in the locker room and actual plays being made. Okay? I don't have answers in linebacker. I don't think any of us have answers in linebacker. I don't care about spring. I don't care about what anybody said. Let me see it in games. Okay? So I'm scared to death about linebacker. It needs to sort itself out. It could be totally fine, guys, but until it is, it isn't. Question marks are not good in football. If you don't know what you have, that can't be neutral. That's a negative. So the linebackers scare me. Corner scares me. Opposite of Troy Pride. You got to figure that out. Okay, so that scares me. Now, I feel a little bit better than I did going into the spring about interior defensive line. For some reason, I just think we're going to be able to hold up there. And I have more confidence in the rotation there to replacing Jerry to be able to hold our own. I feel a little better about that. My anxiety level isn't as high with that as it is with the linebackers and that corner position. And so we're going into fall camp now, and I still have the questions about who. You just can't have a whole linebacker group where there's no experience and no established leadership and feel good about it. And that's the problem with these choppy recruiting classes of the past. You swing and miss it, that Caleb Kelly, who ended up at Oklahoma linebacker class. You covered it up for a couple years. Now it comes home to roost. It never affects you that year you missed the recruit. It's the next couple years when those guys in that class see playing time and are starters. You realize the cupboard's bare. That's the situation Notre Dame's in. Could be fine. I don't know, though. And until I know, it's going to scare the hell out of me. It's just the way I am. I mean, I know that there are names with a lot of talent. I people expect a lot out of Jordan Jedmarkeith and Bo Bauer and Shane Simon and Jack Lamb and Owusu Karmoa, all this stuff. And it could be fine. But until it is, it isn't. And so I don't know. And the other thing is, you better make good use of those first 2 weeks before you go to Athens to figure it out. And you're going to have to make some tough decisions. Who to move around? Who isn't going to work where? Who fits in for what situation? Hopefully a leader emerges, a vocal leader out there, getting guys in the right place. That's all stuff we need to figure out against Louisville, New Mexico. Trying to figure that out down there in Athens at a night game, that's how you lose by 40 points. You can't be running around like chickens with your head cut off all over the middle of the field. That's my nightmare. So you better figure this out. Who can do what and who can't weeks 1 and 2. But I do admit, and I don't really know why, but maybe it's just because I've seen some of these guys play. But that interior defensive line situation, I actually feel like we're going to be able to hold up between Myron and Jason Adamanola. And it makes me nervous with Heinisch and Lacey. Like, that worries me a lot more than D-tackle worries me. That nose spot, just because Lacey's a freshman and Heinisch, he gets turned around a little bit. But I feel like maybe, especially because of our depth at defensive end, somehow I just think that will end up affecting, mitigating if it's rough for us. And so I still think it's going to be painful losing Jerry, but I think there's enough there that'll be serviceable. But that linebacker situation and that opposite corner worries the hell out of me, opposite Troy Pride. So I'm not going to have the answers I'm looking for until after weeks 1 and 2 to figure out how we're going to line that part up going into Georgia. So I still have question marks about that. Linking into that, leadership. You lost all this leadership on every edge of your defense. Who's it going to be? Gilman's a leader. I think Elliott's a leader. Who's going to be a leader on offense? Who's going to be a leader for the linebackers? Okay, this is the stuff that I want to see. It's something to think about. Here's the other thing. Banks with the rehab, that makes me a little nervous. He needs to be back and ready to go for Georgia for sure. But this offensive line needs to improve. And I expect that they will. But they had 25% of the run plays last year went for 0 or negative yards. A quarter of the run plays went for 0 or negative yards. That is appalling to me and should never happen. So the O-line just needs to get better. It just plain does. We have the athletes. We have the size. We have the guys. They need to step up as a group and play better. 25% of carries for 0 negative yards. You're just throwing downs in the garbage can. That can't be. That can't be. That is too many plays where somebody's just getting blown up And then it puts you behind the sticks. Because I guarantee if you're running that off that often, it's on early down. So now you're already second or third and 9 or 10 or 11 or 12. So this group needs to improve across the board. And I actually think they will, but they need to. And Banks being healthy is the first key. Now, these next two things, they're going to make perfect sense to you. But this one is Chip and BK expanding the offense in every single way. We saw some of that in the blue and gold game, but not as much as I'd like to. I didn't see enough downfield attempts and all that stuff. Maybe they just didn't want to show it, you know, whatever. But BK and Chip have talked about expanding this offense to be more explosive. They've both mentioned it a bunch of times. I'll believe it when I see it, and not against Louisville and New Mexico. That does not impress me. I want to see it against the better teams on our schedule. I want to see it against Michigan, and I definitely want to see it against Georgia. So they could talk about we need to be more electric all they want. Till I see it, I don't buy it. So let me see it. Don't be afraid to let your players make plays. And so I think there's two uniquely different challenges for our offensive and defensive coordinators. Because for Chip Long, I need to see this offense take the next step to being electric, more yards after the catch, more point. We need to average more points, okay? Because that's the other thing, too. If you're anticipating the defense to step back a little bit, you need the offense to take a step up to make up for it. So I need to see the offense putting up more yards, more points, more yards after the catch, all that kind of stuff. Okay, so he needs to take a step forward. Chip does. The unique thing is, if Clark Lee got the same or almost close to the same production out of the defense this year as he did last year, I think we would all take that. I would. So for the defense, I think it's more of a challenge of maintaining. Because if I can get out of them what I got out of them last year, that's enough to win all of our games. We already proved it. Okay, so that's the challenge for Clark Lee. Can he minimize any drop-off there may be from us losing all of our top-end talent to the NFL? And so those are some unique challenges. Chip needs to expand and develop and get more electric and take the next step. Clark Lee needs to try and maintain what we got going on. And I think that all starts with the depth and talent at the defensive end position. You got to find ways to let them guys wreak havoc and ruin other teams' plans. Okay, and so that's a unique challenge. They're opposites in a lot of ways for the offense and defense. And then here's the last thing I had on my list. What has Brian Kelly learned from the 12-0 and then Clemson debacle that is going to make us better this year? And I think I have some of the answer to that. And one of it is, I think recruiting has ramped up, and I'm while it isn't perfect, there are still gaps in recruiting. Secondary recruiting is still a problem for Notre Dame. I mean, yeah, Julian Love, so a lot of people just kind of think good thoughts because of Julian Love and Troy Pride. But trying to recruit top-end corners and stuff, it's a problem for Notre Dame, and it still is, even in these good 2021 classes. Okay, but overall, the recruiting has taken a step up. We're getting more high-end talent than we have the last few years. So in that way, I do give them credit for adjusting and ramping it up. Now, maybe that's just they found a group, hit a high school group of guys that have a lot of talent are open to Notre Dame, and a lot of years some aren't. So maybe that's some of that's just luck with this group of kids they've run into. I don't know, but I have to give them credit for that. Because these two classes are pretty damn good for now for Notre Dame. And I think the staff continuity helps. You got guys sticking around and a good blend of older guys, younger guys. And so recruiting higher-end talent is one thing after the Clemson game I identified we needed to work on to be able to compete. I do see that happening. I want to see what else Brian Kelly's learned and how he can evolve and evolve this team to take the next step. And that's what we need to see. Brian Kelly knows he's hit a glass ceiling here. How is he going to get us past it? That has to be the next step for him. And so that's my list. And so there are a few items where I actually feel a little better about. Interior defensive line, I do. The running back position, I guess, okay. Receivers, I definitely feel better about that, you know. But there are still these question marks that you're just not going to have answers to until pretty much Athens, Georgia. Then you're going to have the answers. That's going to tell you everything you need to know. And I know that's a broken record because I say it on this show all the time, but it's still true. That's when you're going to find out whether it's a rebuild or a reload again. And I am just not in the mood for another rebuild. I mean, we need to get to the point where you can reload with guys that are ready to come in and perform, not rebuild and take a step back. We are too far into the Brian Kelly era to be taking steps back and blowing years to rebuild. We just are. I don't have the patience for it. I'm sorry. All right, we've gone just about an hour. I think you all know what time it is. It is time for another edition of Always Annoyed. Here's the thing. It's kind of hard to top last week. A lot of people really enjoyed that one. And me blowing my stack. And so I don't think I can compete with that this week. But it's still going to be something that's thoroughly annoyed me my entire life. Something that I don't understand how anyone could possibly enjoy in any way. This is something that I avoid socially at every possible opportunity. I make sure to never put myself in a position to be subjected to this. I think it is just awful for society. I don't know how anybody could enjoy it. I just think it's terrible. And what am I talking about? I am talking about karaoke. I don't understand it. I don't understand the appeal of it. I think it is one of the worst inventions in the world. Listen, if you want to turn on any horrible song and get drunk and sing it in the privacy of your own living room, by all means, go ahead and do it. I don't care about that. But when you want to go in public and make other people hear you, I got problems with this. So here's where we're going to start with it. Number one is, here's the first problem. 99.9% of songs sung in a karaoke situation are already atrocious, even when sung by the actual band or artist singing them naturally. Not you and your dumb, drunk, idiotic friends on a night out. I'm talking about the actual groups. So that's the first problem I have is most songs selected for karaoke are already shitty on their own in their original version with professional singers. So that's where we need to start. These songs are already garbage. They're already not good when they're sung by the actual artist. So then you and your group of dumb, hammered, it's always dumb groups of big white idiots. That's who sings karaoke that I see everywhere. Big dumb groups of drunk white people are generally the culprit here, okay? And then they're drunk, so then you're yelling, you're off with the lyrics and you're yelling them and everybody's singing different parts. How is that fun? How is that fun? Why should I, guy just trying to enjoy a beer sitting at the corner of this bar, why should I have to listen to that? The answer is I never will and I won't. And any bar I've ever been to where they go, oh, at 9 o'clock, karaoke, see ya. I'm gone. No interest. Instant migraine. Large groups of drunk, dumb white people are among the most annoying people you could ever imagine. And karaoke is a perfect example. Okay, so the problem is these songs are so shitty to begin with. I wouldn't listen to them just on YouTube or on the radio, let alone you and your drunk friends stumbling up there. Now you might asking, well, John, to what songs are you referring? This is not only a list from my own mind. This is a list from Googling most requested karaoke songs. And they all matched with the ones that came to my mind as being terrible. terrible! Who can listen to these songs? Oh, John, what are you talking about? Don't stop believing. John hears it and he starts leaving. I'm out of here. That song's freaking terrible. Whoa, living on a prayer. Listening to this is why John has no hair. Terrible, terrible song. What about this one? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get all drunk with my dumb friends, and then we're going to sing about the different items that go on a cheeseburger. Seriously. Jimmy Buffett makes a song about the ingredients on a cheeseburger, and you and your friends think I want to hear that at midnight on a Saturday night in Chicago. False. I don't. Take it off the menu. That ain't no paradise. That also goes for anything that's 98 degrees, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, okay, New Kids on the Block, any of that stuff that you should have grown out of once you were a girl and you're over the age of 15. Nobody wants to hear that, okay? Like, nobody cares that when you first got your training bra, Justin Timberlake was the hottest thing. With his curly hair, okay? Nobody wants to hear that. This also goes for all these girl power songs. You know, Kelly Clarkson, since you've been gone. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be gone because you're annoying and you're bad at singing. Okay? So since you've been gone, I'm going to be gone. And so is everybody else in this place because you suck at singing. Here's a classic. You know what nobody wants to hear a drunk group of people try and sing? An 8-minute Bohemian Rhapsody that only Freddie Mercury can sing. Everybody just starts mumbling at the wrong times because the words get all fast and they think they're doing it right and they're not. And then the song goes on for 9 minutes. Okay? Not for you. Don't even try it. Now, I'm not trying to single out any particular group, but I can't help but notice the biggest culprits with karaoke are always drunk groups of women. They just are. I'm sorry. But just from my life experience, from college towns to living in Chicago and going to those bars, okay, it's always these dumb groups of five friends, women, that are all hammered and then think they're all Whitney freaking Houston. They're the biggest culprits. And the problem also with them is they just pick the worst songs. They pick the worst songs. Seriously. Anything from Grease, any of that dumb shit. Oh, Summer Lovin' had me a blast. Yeah, somebody blast me in the face so I don't have to listen to this. That's not to mention one of the worst songs ever made is Dancing Queen. That is one of the most atrociously written pieces of music I've ever heard in my entire life. And I don't understand why every group of dumb drunk girls loves that song. It's terrible. Oh my God, let's not forget about this one. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, why are you doing this to me? No, no, just no. Lame, old, no, get off the stage. And then this girl's favorite, which is an atrocious song on its own. That's stupid. Oh, the single ladies, oh, the single ladies. That is the most annoying hook I've ever heard. That song is terrible. It was when it was popular, and it certainly is when you're heard of drunks try and sing it. Terrible. You're gonna stay a single lady if you keep going to public making people listen to this garbage. Stop it. You want me to keep going with bad female karaoke songs? How about this? Something, something, girls just wanna have fun. Well, why don't you have fun somewhere where it doesn't affect me by having to listen to your shitty voice? Why don't you go have fun and do that? Stupid song. Oh, da-da-da-da-da. I will survive. Well, I don't think my eardrums will if you're gonna keep looking like you're gonna eat the microphone like it's a corn dog while you're trying to sing 20 margaritas deep. I don't think I'm going to survive. How about that for I will survive? Ooh, what about this one? Like a virgin for the very first time. Yeah, you're going to stay a virgin because nobody likes you singing. So you're probably going to stay a virgin for a very long time. Okay? Horrible. Not fun. Stop doing it. And stop thinking you sound better than you really do just because you're drunk and up there with your besties. But it's just not even the girl songs. People just like the worst possible songs to sing. Pour some sugar on me. Yeah, I actually wish it was acid instead of sugar. So then I wouldn't have to deal with this. Is what I wish you'd pour on me. Go ahead. And don't even get me started on, I think, the worst song ever written that became famous, Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond. That is the worst song I've ever heard in my entire life. One, he's a weirdo. And if you actually look up what that song's about, look it up. I'm not even going to tell you. Look it up. It's creepy as hell. What that song is about is creepy. If you look it up and know the meaning to it, which you should. If you're going to get up there and sing this horrible song, you should at least know what it's written about. But oh, how creative. It's so fun for everybody to go, bah, bah, bah. Yeah, real creative. Horrible song. I hate that song. I've always hated that song. It's terrible. Neil Diamond's terrible. And you singing it, and it's, no, can't handle it. Terrible song. Terrible song, but everybody wants to sing that. Terrible. What about, I would do anything for love? Yeah, you're gonna have to if you finish this shitty performance, lady. Get off the stage! And you know the other bad part with karaoke is? There's always like somebody who thinks they're actually a good singer and takes it really, really seriously even though they're not good. Which bothers me too because you're not good, but they're acting like they're on America's Got Talent or some shit. And they're not. They're in a hole in the wall bar in Wrigleyville. Or whatever, okay? Like, so you have the person who thinks it's a professional performance and it isn't. And then you have, you know, it's like a Saturday night in Chicago. Everybody's out having a good time. Everybody's in a good mood. I'm trying to drink and get my energy up. And then you got some broad up there singing Adele, depressing everybody, having everybody, giving everybody suicidal thoughts because she's singing Adele about her latest breakup. There's only one person who can sing Adele, and it's Adele. Or it's just always some of the cheesiest songs. Like, jeez, I just can't. I just don't have patience for cheesy songs that people tend to like. Like, bye bye, Miss American Pie. I would rather die than listen to that. So here's the thing. All these songs are just terrible. Okay? On their own. Then I'm already drinking, so you're susceptible to headaches when you're drinking. So then you and your friends get up there, you're behind, you're all singing different parts, you're drunk, then you start laughing. It's all annoying, and it's all amplified by microphones. So that is a nightmare scenario for me. Okay, and so that's the problem. Then here's the flip side problem of this issue is, let's say it's a song I actually like. By the off chance, let's say it's a somebody picks a song I like. Like, I'll give you some examples. Like Juicy by Biggie Smalls. Terrific song. I know every single word. But I guarantee the drunks getting up there and singing this don't. And then you're going to butcher Juicy for me. And so you're going to butcher my Biggie song because you're terrible at it. And then you ruin the good song even. So then I can't get behind that either because you're going to butcher a good song I like and I wish you would just shut up and let me listen to Juicy. Even like Sweet Home Alabama is a decent, at least that's an actual rock and roll song. Okay, with a good riff. You're going to ruin it because you can't sing it right. You're going to ruin it. So I guess I really don't know what to say. I hate the entire exercise. Most of the songs are trash on their own. Add in alcohol and a big group of dumb white people in a room with a microphone and an amplifier, and it's just going to end bad and be annoying. And even the good songs, they're not going to sing them right. So basically what I'm saying is this entire operation is just bad. It's just really, really bad. And then the other thing people will say to me is, oh, just have a few more beers and then you'll loosen up and you'll get into it. No, it's actually the opposite. It's actually the opposite. The drunker I get, the more agitated I'm going to get, and the more I'm going to have to bite my lip to not tell you to shut up and get off stage. So it's actually the opposite. The more I drink, the more likely it is I'm going to get a headache from listening to you yell things out of key and out of tune. Okay? I would walk 500 miles to get away from this bar where they're doing karaoke. Or what about this? Today is gonna be the day that I walk out, never come back to this bar, because you've taken this karaoke thing and let it go really, really far. I don't believe that anybody should have to listen to this garbage right now. So, you might think that I'm being harsh. I don't care. This is not entertaining or relaxing or fun to me in any way, shape, or form. It's just totally annoying. And so I propose that people just quit doing it. It's just annoying. And I've always felt this way. I've never been able to tolerate it. I never will be able to tolerate it. I think it's just one of the worst things ever invented for supposed entertainment. I just can't do it. The quality of the songs is terrible, and the quality of the people singing them is terrible. And that makes for a horrible entertainment experience. It just does. So that's my stance on karaoke. I just hope next time you're in one of these environments, you'll look at it harshly. Because if you really look at what's going on, it's bad for everybody involved. All right, that's going to be the show for this week. Don't forget, if you are interested in a little swag bag or whatever you want, I'm going to call it, send me your information via email, jkznd4@yahoo.com. Send me your information and you will receive some items in the mail, okay? So don't forget to do that. Until next week, we'll see you on Twitter.